Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon, or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight, because this is a show you just don't want to miss. I'm with Rose Wetzel. She is currently, unfortunately, number two in the world as Spartan Racing goes. Rose, go ahead and say hello to our audience.
Hello, everybody.
So, Rose, I came out with that. I probably hit you right over the head with it. But, you know, you were number one up until just recently, right?
Well, I started out the year ranked as number one, although I will say that the year is early, right? So it's hard to take much stock in that, but it was kind of fun for a couple months there to be like, wow, cool. But I really have my sights set, of course, on the main season and really the championship season. So that's when it really matters, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I'm just kind of poking fun here a little bit, but
I can dig it.
I want to back up and just kind of talk a little bit about your past, because I think that the way you came into the sport is pretty intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Obviously enough, for those that do know you, you've got a track and field background, and you established some pretty exciting numbers. According to what you've sent me, your PR for the mile was 4:46, which is pretty stellar.
Actually, it's 4:42. Thank you. The wrong list. So 4 minutes and 42 seconds I ran just 2, maybe 3 years ago when I was trying to make the Olympic trials time. I came short, but ran my fastest by far in the process. So that's a win for me right there, I'd say, in general.
Yeah. And then what about the 10K or 5K time? It says 16:27. Is that accurate?
Ooh, 16:14.
Look at you.
Yeah. I sent you the wrong one. I am not perfect. So 16:14. So I ran a 16:14 again just a few years ago. I actually ran a lot faster after college than in college, even though I was in an amazing top 10 Division I program at Georgetown. I've always been a bit of a late bloomer, and so I... Yeah, had an awesome coach and really went for it, 6 years after college.
Yeah, well, I'm just spouting the numbers you tossed me, honey.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you. When you say late bloomer, can I ask how old you are?
I just turned 33.
Okay, good. So still a puppy, lots of time.
Yeah.
Okay, totally. So, you know, you got a pretty storied career. I mean, you've been racing, and I think I heard your husband mentioned in one of the video clips that I looked at, that you came into the sport with 17 years worth of racing experience, and he suggested that makes a big difference for you, where I think a lot of these folk that you're racing against may not have that depth behind them, and that's probably clearly working in your favor.
Yeah, I think it's just, to me, I feel like I have raced so many races that, don't get me wrong, every race is important, and I'm so excited and a little bit nervous for every race, and that good combination of nervousness and excitement. But at the end of the day, I guess I have the gift of perspective in that I have had so many bad races along with awesome races, and I know that life goes on either way. And so, I had moments in my career where I would have a really bad race, and I'd be upset, and I'd be crying, and I would be, just so bummed about it. And then I go back and I train harder, and I have a great race after that. So I know that life goes on; people still care about me, and all of that. So I find that to be helpful, and really, I don't know that everybody has that perspective, because it just came to me, at least, with time, and that's a gift, really, because then it allows me to enjoy the sport more and the whole process, where I know, quote unquote good race or quote unquote bad race, I'm still going to have a good day, because I'm going to choose to have a good day, because I know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, it's been, as a coach and being in the sports performance business for the past forever. I mean, I've been doing this for close to 30 years now. I look at these events like a Rubik's Cube, you know, how do you figure it out?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And so I have kind of a voyeuristic approach to it anymore because, you know, my days of getting out there and competing are you know, unfortunately, I have to say, long gone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I revel in the whole backstory and how do we get these people to the front of the line, you know? And
sure.
So where I'm leading with this is that, you know, I talked to Joe DeSena. We did an interview a while back, and we talked about where we felt the studs of the sport are going to emerge. And everybody that I talked to, I had this conversation with Jun Yong Park. You know, as you know, I train Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And but various guys I speak with all agree that this is a running sport, and that's your background. And so
mm-hmm.
I think, and I want to get your take on it, but I think that you're going to lean on your running skills by about 75% in order to win these races. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that in general, I see where people are coming from with that. It does depend on the race, however. Like, for instance, this last race, which is totally an anomaly for Spartan, cool event, you know, the Bahamas Spartan Sprint, there was a lot of swimming in that. And that ended up being a big factor, at least for me, because swimming is not something that I've done very much in my life. I didn't really, you know, we didn't swim as kids. We didn't, you know, have lessons or anything. And so it's kind of still this, this activity that that doesn't come naturally for me. And as an adult, I could get lessons. I could put time and energy into it. Don't get me wrong. I you know, I'm taking personal responsibility, but it's just in general, not the best use of my time. So once in a while, when there's a race that has a bunch of swimming, you know, if you're a quote unquote runner without a swimming background, you're not going to come out on top. But at the end of the day, since most races don't have a lot of swimming, you're mainly on your feet and you're running from obstacle to obstacle. And even when there are lots of obstacles and long obstacles, long sandbag carries and long bucket carries, for instance, you're still on your feet, and having that running background is beneficial. So I will say that it's not just the running background that makes a good Spartan, because I know a lot of runners who are really good, very fast runners, who wouldn't be able to do the Hercules or the, you know, sandbag carry without wobbling. So I feel like it has to be a runner who happens to have also an extra athletic background, more so than the average runner, and is stronger than the average runner, because I think just a straight-up runner through and through wouldn't necessarily fare very well on a Spartan course, especially as Spartan tends to get heavier and heavier as the years go on.
Right. Well, I guess I should clarify what I'm saying is that I've seen guys, proof in the pudding is I get a guy like Hunter. Hunter's got an amazing mm-hmm. athletic ability. He's very, very strong,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
he's a big guy. And he mm-hmm. came to me for the very simple reason that he came to grips with the fact that if he didn't hone his running skills, he's just going to have a lot of trouble dealing with, the longer distance races.
Right.
Even in Temecula, you know, he had a hard time after about, I think it was like 8 miles into the race or so, he started running mm-hmm. into some trouble. And in the World Championships last year too, he said that after about mm-hmm. 10 miles, he was just crushed, and he was mm-hmm. he was doing great all through the race. So I would like to think that you have a better chance developing your upper body strength if you're a good runner than you would be capable of, you know, or vice versa, right? So
mm-hmm.
I don't
agree. Mm-hmm.
You can't have one without the other. And I think as the sport matures, there's going to be standards in the obstacles that are going to be kind of the go-to obstacles when you show up an event. You know they're going to be there, and then you're mm-hmm. gonna have, like you suggested, the anomalies where you're going to show up and, like, they say, hey, guess what? You got to swim 200 meters with your shoes on, right?
Right.
But
well, yeah.
So anyway, that's the nature of it, right?
Yeah, and I would say that I totally agree with the fact that it's easier, I would think, to take a runner and make them strong. I mean, you can develop one's athleticism, but there are some people who are just naturally athletic, coordinated. agile, all that stuff, right? So having that natural athleticism helps. Because I know a lot of runners who will say, I'm a great runner, but I'm not athletic. You know, I can't catch a ball, you know, kick a ball, all that. So if you're one of the runners that happens to have a very athletic background, play soccer, play basketball, you know, is coordinated, that's helpful. If you take a runner with an athletic background and then you make them strong, you know, that's a good recipe for a good obstacle racer right there.
Right.
Although my only hesitation in saying that in full confidence is that I don't want to turn away those that don't have a running background. I don't want them to say, well, I never ran, you know, track or cross country in high school, so I guess I'll never make it to the top of the Spartan team. Because you have someone like Isaiah who's doing really, really well. He doesn't have a running background at all that I know of. I believe he comes from more of a football-based background.
Right.
So I don't want to close any doors for anybody and discourage anybody. But at the end of the day, if I, as a coach, had to choose, you know, an athlete with a running background who's also has an athletic twist to them, but not a lot of upper body strength, I'd rather take them over the, you know, strong athlete, but who just doesn't ever, quote unquote, do cardio. Because I think that person B would just take longer to get to the spot.
Right. Well, I think that all of these disciplines require training. I mean,
and the
problem with runners, and you probably will, you know, being a running coach yourself, you could probably agree with me, I hope, that a lot of people take running for granted. They just assume that, you know, it's what they've always done since, you know, they've been able to stand upright. They start moving and they start running around and they just take it for granted. Where, you know, if you're learning to box or something like this is a skill. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get in the ring with a world champion and expect a farewell. You got to learn how to box. And same with running. So I would imagine that if you're heavy, you realize that it's a function of strength to weight ratio in all of these aspects. I mean, if you're real heavy, running is going to be difficult. If you're real heavy, it's going to be hard to climb a rope or to do a chin.
Mm-hmm.
It really becomes the athleticism, I guess, the way you coined it, is really relative to developing a real strong strength to weight ratio.
Yeah, strength to body ratio really is key. Obviously, there are some just absolute strength obstacles where you just have to be able to pull that Hercules down. You have to be able to, you know, take that sandbag, that heavy bucket, and just go for, you know, a long period, especially in the World Championship or in any beast. But at the end of the day, really having that great strength to body weight ratio is key. I was just telling Tim, my husband, the other day, after being on the Spartan cruise with all those American Ninja Warriors and training for American Ninja Warrior myself, you know, I appreciate people who are very, very strong. Like the videos that I see on Facebook of people doing CrossFit workouts where they're just pushing heavy weight. It's very impressive, right? Very, very impressive. And I've always enjoyed strength training, and I actually do it for a career for people. But gosh, what the ninjas can do, what people with an amazing strength to body weight ratio can do, is phenomenal. I mean, just really, really cool. So I think about what kind of like athlete I want to be, and I'm more drawn towards the, you know, the rock climbing, the parkour, the, you know, doing a handstand down the stairs type of stuff, than the just like go and push crazy heavy amounts of weight, possibly throw your back out. Hopefully not. And, you know, personally, you know, that's just personally what I.
Well, yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, and quite frankly, I think that's probably the aspiration for most people, because it's that functional strength that really, really wins the day. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm sitting by. I mean, we got to talk about it. You know, it's going to come up, right? I'm sitting by the bar on the cruise ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are hanging from their fingertips from you know, the railing above the bar. And you know, were you watching some of that crazy stuff they were doing?
Crazy. Yep, it was crazy. I was in awe.
So I don't even know who the guy was, but the guy's lying on his back with his feet up in the air, like, you know, like the dying cockroach position, barefoot, barebacked. And the other guy runs over barefoot and jumps onto his feet with his feet and is balancing on his feet, foot to foot. And then reaches down, grabs his hands, and does a handstand on his hands, and the guy's doing The guy's doing press-ups with this guy handstanding on his hands.
No way. No way. And how big was that guy? Was he just a massive, bulky,
these guys, I'll bet you neither one of these guys tipped the scale over 145 pounds.
Right.
But
And they just, they can do.
When you're 145 pounds and you can have somebody do a handstand on your hands while you're lying on your back and basically do like a bench press with them, you're essentially showing that you are equivocally capable of moving your body weight in precarious positions. I mean, that's bizarre.
Oh, I would rather bench press a million times over than have a human person like wobbly body. I mean, that's so much more impressive, right?
It's not like they've been practicing this either. I mean, these guys are drinking by the bar.
Well, and also a lot of them even knew each other, because I was able to meet a lot of them, and I don't know if those two guys, maybe they practice all day long together as next door neighbors, but there's a good chance they just met each other that weekend,
I'm sitting
second or third time.
I was sitting next to them. I mean, I actually had to move away from my table so a body didn't land on me. And so, they like whisper to each other, hey, let's try this. Okay. So they like do, they just kind of get their head together, and then they did something really circus-like, right?
Oh, I love it. That's so awesome.
And the one I really liked was the guy reaches up, grabs the railing above the bar, and then he planks out, right? So he's holding on. Mm. Just try to imagine a reverse push-up, but there's no ground. He's just kind of planked out.
Okay, yeah.
And then so the other guy grabs his shoulders and hangs from him and planks beneath him. So these guys double planked hanging. So the guy on top's got to hold the guy's body weight, plus the guy beneath him's just holding on to his shoulders. I thought he was going to rip his deltoid off,
Right.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, so this is the kind of character that is emerging from this sport, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I just think it's fascinating. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, so while we're on the subject, the race there. So I'm gathering that you didn't appreciate the swim.
Oh, I mean, it's not that I didn't appreciate it, because at the end of the day, I did do the swim. I mean, I know it's kind of gray, but I think people are allowed to grab the rope, especially in the open heat. It's kind of frowned upon in the leagues, I feel like. So I could have probably grabbed the rope and just pulled myself along with the rope, but I wanted to swim. And it wasn't just about, getting the best place and earning the most money. It's not that I don't care about those things, and those things aren't helpful for my life and sponsors and all that. But at the end of the day, there was a challenge ahead of me. I was going to do that swim, and I was going to do it as well as I could. And it was a performance goal of mine. So when I do races, I have outcome goals and I have performance goals. And I know you know what these are.
Yeah.
But for those that don't, it's just, the outcome goal is, I want to win, or I want a podium, or I want to, run this certain time, if it's a track race, for instance. But the performance goals are the goals that are things like, well, I'm going to, do the swim and really focus on relaxing in the swim and trying to swim straight, which, yes, is difficult for some of us. Or I'm going to really try to push the uphills or whatever the case may be. So one of my performance goals was to, run as well as I could, get to that swim as quickly as I could. And then just try to relax and enjoy the water and enjoy the fact that I was in the Bahamas and swim as well as I could, but try to keep my heart rate down, because when I swim, my heart rate jacks up so high that even if I can move decently through water, as far as speed, just by muscling my way through inefficiently, I come out and my heart rate is through the roof. And so I'm glad I did the swim, I guess, is my point. But at the same time, it's not a forte of mine. It's not something that helps me become the best obstacle racer I can be. But at the end of the day, one of these days, I might just say, sign me up for swim lessons. I'm going every day for 5 weeks.
Yeah. I come from a triathlon background, and the swimming is something that I'm most comfortable at. But it does require a tremendous amount of skill to run, mm-hmm. to swim well. And it can make a huge difference in an event like that. When you, I believe it was about 200 meters was the swim distance. Is that right? So
that's, for me, it was longer. I almost ran into the dock.
Yeah. The point is that the further that swim is, the greater advantage a good swimmer would have in a short race like that.
And the person who won was a triathlete. I mean, an amazing obstacle racer, Deanna Blake, is phenomenal from long, short distances. But she also was a triathlete, so she did really well in the swim, and I don't blame her for flying up from Australia. She probably looked at that race and said, ooh, I'll take that one.
I could see that, too. Well, I think it came as a surprise to a lot of people, you know, that, you know, that there was going to be that much swimming involved. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a great race and a lot of cool stuff going on.
Totally.
All right. Yeah. So what is your calendar look like now? What's the next race?
Well, I'm going to race. Well, first I have American Ninja Warrior in 2.5 weeks. So that's kind of my main focus right now on top of my normal obstacle racing. And then I'm going to do the Spartan Super in Las Vegas on April 18th. My brother lives down there, so it's a fun race. It's a you know, interesting city, I will say, unlike any other city. But my brother lives down there, so it's an opportunity to visit him, which would be great. He just moved down there a few months ago, so I'll be his first visitor. So April 18th, Vegas, and then from there I'm going to be doing all the TV races. So Montana, Spartan Race, and, you know, Pennsylvania, Washougal by my home. I'll probably do a few other races. Like, I would like to try the Mud Guts and Glory race on May 23rd. If I can manage to, you know, fly over there and get that fit in. It's far away and kind of an expensive ticket, but if I can swing it, I'll do it. And then really just the championship races. I mean, they kind of come spouting off, every weekend starting in October. So I'll be focusing on those and just, trying to, you know, get better at my elevation, coming from a track background, preparing myself for the mountain races and, getting some swimming for Tahoe and who knows what I'll do for altitude, this sea level girl who's prone to anemia, but, I'll figure something out.
Did you say swimming for Tahoe?
Well, I believe there's going to be swimming in Tahoe because there was swimming at the World Championship in Vermont, and there are lakes up in Tahoe. So
you better hope you don't have to swim in Lake Tahoe.
Oh, why is it cold?
Oh, my God.
Really?
That's like the coldest lake in the country.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Lake Tahoe. I've trained guys for World's Toughest Triathlon, which was conducted at Lake Tahoe, and the swim there, just everybody's coming out of the water. If you're not prepared for that, I'm just telling you, you're going to want to wear, if they put you in that water, you're going to want to wear a rubber hat. And I'm not talking about a swim cap. I'm talking about a rubber, insulated rubber hat. And probably, I'm telling you, it's cold. So,
oh, good to know.
Yeah. But anyway, so talk about the Ninja Warrior thing. That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited because I, you know, didn't necessarily expect to get chosen per se. I think that being a Spartan has really helped me in that process. I mean, one friend of mine who's really athletic said, he's like, you know, yeah, the course looks really hard and stuff. He's like, but I think the hardest thing is just getting on the show because so many people want to be on the show. It's so popular. And so I'm really grateful I got on. I only have a few weeks to train because it's not something I was, you know, focusing on and planning necessarily to get asked to be on. So, you know, I'm just trying to pack in some, you know, parkour gym time around my normal training and some rock climbing. I got like a 10 punch card at the local rock climbing gym and I've gone 10 times in like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm getting some work in, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm training for obstacle racing, you know, that's what I'm training for. So I'm staying focused on that, you know, trying to continue to get my running mileage up. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to do well. I'd like to do as well as I can with limited training, because what an opportunity, you know,
Well, just just to be called an American Ninja Warrior. I mean, that's cool stuff. You need to walk around in black garb with a little, you know, those little throwing stars into your belt, you know?
Right. Well, and the thing about American Ninja Warrior, too, is that no one's actually conquered all three stages. So basically everyone that's been on, whether it's been for 1 second or for, you know, 2.5 stages, they're all just American Ninja Warriors. Like, there's not a big designation of, like, you know, I'm American Ninja Warrior level one, I'm an American Ninja Warrior level two. It's just, we're all American Ninja Warriors. So you're right. Just getting on the show and just doing whatever you can makes you an American Ninja Warrior, which, you know, boosts your marketing stock up if you're into that branding.
Sure.
Wise.
Right.
You're, or just, you know, if you're single on Match.com, I mean, I'm sure it helps there as well.
Well, I've watched the show. Actually, I never watched it on television. I think I watched it on YouTube a couple times. And
mm-hmm.
or maybe even seen some posts on Facebook, but just some of the stuff these guys do is really, you know, you just, how in the hell do they hang like that and do these types?
Oh yeah,
yeah. And so it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But better you than me.
Yeah, well, I've heard that a lot of it's about grip strength, and it's not necessarily about crushing grip. It's about, like you said, like being able to hang from, you know, the bar, from the little ledge above your doorway, where you're just literally on your fingertips. And being able to do it for a long period of time. So I was told to go to the rock climbing gym, but instead of trying to always do the most difficult, you know, V3 or whatever route you can do the easy route, but do it 3 times in a row, take a little break, and then do it again so your arms are just totally pumped out. And that was really good advice, I thought, because that's what gets a lot of people out. It's not their ability to just crush something in their hand, or even rock climb well. It's how can they rock climb well for, you know, many, many, many minutes in a row.
Yeah.
So.
So, when you do the races that you do, looking at your background, I would think that you're probably more prone to the sprints. Is that true?
Well, I am. Yes, I am prone to the sprints. But the thing is that in the sprint races, the spear throw becomes a lot more proportionally important. And I'm a decent spear thrower. I've certainly made more than I've missed, and my trajectory is getting better and better, and I do practice on a somewhat regular basis. But at the end of the day, like, for instance, this last week, I was the first in spear throw. I think I've always, every single race I've ever done, been the first in spear throw. I can't think of a single race where someone's actually just beat me to the spear throw. And you know, I threw my spear as the ref said beautifully. It went right between the eyes where I was aiming, and it fell right out. Now, this happened to be a different spear throw. It was smaller, and it was a different, it wasn't a bale of hay because they weren't able to ship in bales of hay to the Bahamas. So it was denser than usual, and then a lot of the elite guys missed it as well, most of them actually. So, you know, I had a good spear throw. It didn't stick. Deanna Blake threw hers, and she threw it right, nailed it right into the wood structure, which totally counted. And but I'm wondering if that was actually a better place to have aimed for, in a way.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I missed that, and that's in a sprint. That's just more. It's more of a risk, right? If there was no spear throw, I'd be all about the sprint. But because there's a spear throw and there's always that option, basically when I'm running, I like the supers. The beasts are very, very long for me. That's just, it's not my forte. I've done marathons in the past, but it's not where my passion lies. Like, I like to train for shorter stuff. I like to run fast. I like to move quickly. I don't want to just be hiking. I don't want to be a competitive hiker. I want to be a competitive obstacle racer. I want to be running. I want to be, you know, intensely moving. And, a super seems to be a good distance for me, because then even if I were to, heaven forbid, miss a spear throw, I have, you know, taking, what, 2 minutes tired to do burpees. I have 2 minutes I can make up in the 8 or 9 miles of running, and I'm usually able to do that. So I say super is really my distance. The only problem is that zero races are Spartan races, at least, our zero championship races are anywhere near the super distance. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's all
yeah.
about the beast and the beast on, you know.
Right.
Times two. But you know,
I think that's going to be interesting. How I just think that there's, it's still in its infancy, and there's going to be a lot of changes in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talked to Joe about this, you know, his aspiration is to try to bring Spartan racing or obstacle racing to the Olympics.
Yes, and that'd be great.
Yeah, and I think it's got a chance. I really do. I think that, mm-hmm. You know, the function of getting more and more countries involved, which is, you know, kind of where his head's at, is, you know, according to what he's told me, is there's 17 countries involved now. But when that happens, what I really believe is going to happen is there's probably going to be a hybrid event. It's probably going to be an arena event. And maybe not. But I think the arena events are what's going to bring it to the prominence to get it to that stage, you know, because it's all about spectator value. You know, being able to see what's happening is what causes, you know, people to be interested in the sport. So,
this
is where I think triathlon struggled because, you know, I got involved in triathlon in the very early days. Where it was, I mean, I sat in on meetings where they were discussing how they were going to govern the sport and cause it to become something that may come to the Olympics and cause it to become something that would be professional sport. Yeah, back in the early 80s. I actually produced the first pro race for CBS Sports in 84.
Cool.
Yeah, but so I kind of compare it to that where a new sport comes about and then drawing it to prominence is a function of how many people are interested in it, right?
Right.
So, but I think it's going to end up being probably some hybrid distance. It's either going to be the sprint distance or maybe longer or maybe even two events because I don't think it's fair to try cause someone to be a world champion when the odds are stacked against you. When you're a long-distance athlete, to be able to perform well in a sprint and vice versa. So,
you know what I mean?
It's like you're either going to be really, really, really dialed in. I mean, it's like asking a 100-meter runner to run a marathon. You know, they're not built for it, right?
Well, it's just like Usain Bolt is super fast. He's amazing fastest person in the whole world. Oh, but if you throw him in a marathon, he's going to be way in the back of the pack. So, someone could watch Usain Bolt run a marathon, not know who he is, and say, man, that guy's not a very good runner.
Right.
You know, but so in track and field, people get to compete at right exactly the distance that they're naturally good at, which is awesome, right? And I come from that background, and that's, you know, been great. I mean, I can do the mile, or I can do the 800 meters. I can kind of find whatever 5K, kind of go through little phases, see what seems like the best distance for me in the phase of my life I'm in, but for this, it's like, you know, I believe I won more Saturday Spartan races than anybody else, male or female, last year. If I you know, did my math correctly. So, in on one hand, it's like, wow, that's great. That's setting myself up well for the championship season, you'd think. But at the end of the day, that championship race for Spartan is so much longer and it's so different that it's not necessarily the case. I sprained my ankle within 20 minutes, so that kind of threw me out of the game right away anyway. But even still, you know, I have to make a decision. Do I train for the seasonal races, the sprints and the supers that are going to be on TV, or do I train for the world championship race, you know what I mean?
Right.
Which I don't naturally enjoy as much. And I think enjoyment is important. I mean, would I love to be a world champion? Of course I would love to be a world champion. That would be amazing. But am I willing to hate my training every day if I have to go out and train for, you know, 3 hours at a, you know, long, slow, boring pace where I want to poke my eyeballs out and sacrifice my sprinting and my natural speed and all that? It's a tough call, you know, to be honest. So anyways, yeah, a lot of people have likened it to, imagine, you know, you're a miler, right? You're a miler, you're your best miler out there, you're a dude running, you know, under 350 or something crazy. You do that all year long, you kill all the races, you're winning like crazy, and then boom, the championship, though, for track and field, the Olympics, is, you know, a marathon on the track, something where you're just like, what?
It's not going to happen.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
well, that's, anyway. Yeah, and that's so that's why I think it's a little skewed. And I think that as time goes, what there ought to be is a world championship in the sprint, a world championship in the super and a world championship in the...
Well, I completely agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And because as someone who's more prone to the shorter stuff, the longer stuff is not great. But vice versa too. I mean, I've had a joking conversation with Amelia where she's like, "Oh, I would love to never do a sprint again," and I'm like, "I'd love to never do a beast again." You know, it's like, she doesn't like coming down and doing shorter stuff. I don't like going up and doing longer stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, we're lucky to be able to do any of this, so I'm certainly not complaining. But still, if the world wants to see the best people competing at their best at their potential, then I'd say, yeah, having the three separate distances as world championships makes sense. And track and field gives out, six, seven, eight, nine Olympic gold medals.
Sure.
Everything between 100, more than that if you count the hurdles.
Right.
So it's not like someone's like, "Oh, well, yeah, you're an 800-meter Olympic gold medal, but there's a dude over there who's a 10K Olympic gold medal." It's like, no, they're all cool. They're all Olympic gold.
Right.
Same with skiing, same with swimming. I mean, swimming also offers a lot, So really, it makes the most sense to have more than one Olympic gold, quote-unquote, or world champion ship race at different distances, and let people train what they're good at. And as the sport gets better, there will be more and more really good people in the sport. And so it'd be great to see the best people duke it out at the distances that they're best at.
Right. I did an interview with Leo Manzano last year, I think it was. And Leo, as won the silver medal in the 5K.
Mm-hmm.
And I call him the Rainmaker because, we hadn't won that, we hadn't podiumed in that event since 1968. And so, 2012, finally he gets a silver medal. But it's like going up to Leo and say, "Hey, Leo, the guy that throws a shot put's not feeling well today."
Yeah, it would be ridiculous. It would be ridiculous.
Yeah, so
exactly.
Take your 124-pound body and we need you to hurl that 9-pound shot.
Ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. So I think, that's where I would like to see the sport go, and I know I'm not alone. So hopefully that's in the works.
Well, I agree with you completely. It's like, and I was fishing for people to bring to this race. They asked me to invite some folks.
Mm-hmm.
I know some pretty interesting people. And
sure.
So one of my friends is a decathlete. He's made the U.S. team 3 years running, and he's a stud. The guy, and a decathlon to me is very, very similar to Spartan racing because, you have obstacles. You're running mm-hmm. the hurdles. You got a high jump. You got a pole vault. You got a spear throw, or a javelin mm-hmm. throw. And so I brought a guy. He was out with us out there, and that was his first time doing a Spartan race. And I thought, dude, here's a guy that runs. I think his PR for the 400 is like 50 seconds.
Uh-huh.
He's pretty quick.
Solid.
And big guy.
Yeah.
50-second 400. I forgot what his 1500 time was, but very respectable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, dude, you better not miss the spear throw, right? You throw a javelin, okay? I mean, you do that.
Yeah.
This should be cake for you. And going over a wall, I mean, come on, he's a pole vaulter. You should be able to just hurl over the wall. But anyway, at the spear throw, he threw and he missed, and he stood there with his hand out. He thought somebody was going to hand him another spear.
Oh no!
I said, dude, we don't have valet spears here. You got to get your own damn spear, right?
I'm actually not surprised he didn't make it in a way because not only was that an exceptionally difficult spear throw in that it was small and a smaller target, but when you're a javelin thrower, sure, you have amazing technique and you can throw it hard and far, but you're not aiming at anything.
Right.
Specifically. You know what I mean?
No.
So.
I know.
It's different.
Well, I know that you didn't come to the combine, the West Coast Combine, but
mm-hmm.
I stood there at the spear throw, and the way they did it is, as you probably are already aware, you have five attempts at a target, mm-hmm. and I think you had five targets that you had to move to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And Isaiah was the only one that nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. He, 5 out of 5 each target, and got to all 25 spears in 51 seconds.
Wow.
Something like 52 seconds, yeah. And nobody even got close to that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and people were throwing over, under, around, falling out. So it's interesting how much influence that it seems like the simplest thing in the sport would be so complicated.
Well, it is very simple for some. It seems like some people just have this form nailed down. And a lot of people would say that it's mental. And I would agree to a certain degree that there is definitely a mental component to it. At the end of the day, though, you also have to be strong enough to throw it hard enough. And you have to, I think it really helps to get some practice in. And not a lot of people have that opportunity. So, I think there's a mental component, but there's also just the physical, you know, getting a feel for it, the weight of the spear, how it feels with a string on the end of it now and stuff.
Yeah.
But it is. It's in Spartan racing, it's a very important aspect. It's not in the other obstacle races, but it is in Spartan in every race, and it can be a deal breaker, and it is for many people. Changes the people in the lead often.
Right. You know, what I found interesting is that I heard that in the Battle Frog events now, if you fail an obstacle, you don't get a chance to burpee out.
Right.
If you burpee out, they pull your wristband off, and then you're out of the money.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not going to lie. I think that's kind of cool in a way, because one thing that I personally like about it is that if I knew I had another chance to do, say, the traverse wall or the monkey bars or whatever, I would just attack the obstacle so much quicker and with so much more, you know, less hesitation, because I'd know that worst case scenario, if I didn't do it or fell off, I could just, you know, jump back off, you know, jump off, you know, come back around, catch my breath, focus on what went wrong, and then do it again, right?
Right.
But whereas now I have to kind of like take my time, make sure my hands are dry, you know, whatever. And there would be something kind of cool about just running up and attacking without even thinking about it, knowing that I have another shot. Because to me, once I have to do burpees are just, I mean, they just take so long and the heart rate's up, and I should practice them more. But a part of me is like, I don't want to practice burpees. I want to practice the obstacles. I don't have to do any burpees, ideally. But yeah. I think that's a cool idea. I mean, there's something to be said for, and I think a lot of people would say, well, if you're going for prize money, you've got to be able to do the obstacles. And I can see that.
All these little things are going to formulate the athlete. I think that we're talking about the varying distances and, you know, the niche associated with the weight of the athlete, the speed of the athlete, and the strength of the athlete. So, and you know how it is. It's like the stronger you get, the less endurance you're going to have. And the more endurance you get, the less strength you're going to have. It's just kind of the way your body develops. So it becomes, you know, polar opposite. Ideally, it would be cool to be, regardless of what the distance is or what the task is, you just conquer it. But, that just doesn't happen.
The thing is that I think that happened a bit back in the day when the sport was really, really, young, and there were people who could just dominate across the board, sprint to super to beast. But it's getting more and more competitive, and that's not happening as much, right? That's not that option. I mean, there aren't people who can win. There's some people in track and field who can win, you know, in the national, maybe the 5K and the 10K, but they're not winning the 800, the mile, and the 5K and the 10K, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I feel like we can take you back to the whole, I would love to see a sprint championship, a super and a beast championship, because it just makes no sense. And I remember talking to Hobie Call last year, and, you know, I was training for both the Spartan World Championship and the Warrior Dash World Championship, two completely different races. I mean, in not just distance, but elevation and obstacle heaviness. I mean, two very different races. And he was like, you know, be careful, because, you know, training for a long distance race can really zap your speed. And so, you know, and it did. You train for two separate races and you don't end up doing the best you can at any particular one had you trained for that specific one. And I saw a quote after that championship season that really resonated well with me. It said something like, you know, he who chases two rabbits catches neither.
Ah,
you know? And so it's like, and going into this championship season thinking like, well, what am I really going to focus on? And how can I be disciplined enough to not just try to jump on board and do everything? Or if I do that, be mature enough to say, I'm not going to do as well as I possibly can at every single one. You know, if I'm trying to enjoy the experience and be the person who can do the best on average at all of them, that's fine. I feel like a lot of athletes this year, as everything gets more and more competitive, are going to be faced with that decision. You know, do I focus on just trying to win the Spartan World Championship, or do I focus on trying to do as well as I can at all the championships? Do I focus on, or if you're a Battle Frog athlete, do I focus just on the Battle Frog, you know, championship, et cetera, et cetera? And so it'll be interesting to see how many people show up at all the races and how many people cherry pick, not cherry pick, it's not the right word, but just are very particular, you know, just focus on World's Toughest Mudder or just focus on whatever. So we'll see.
I think cherry picking is probably the right term. I mean, I'll tell you what, if I was, well, I'll give you a good example. Mike Wardian, who came out and, you know, he set that world record on the treadmill for 50 kilometers. Mm-hmm. You know, what a sport. He dude's like T-Rex. He's got no upper body strength at all. And he does a Spartan race, and he ended up doing like 120 burpees, right?
Yeah. So, and then that's what I mean, yeah, about just, oh, just if you're, oh, all the runners. Because I remember last year hearing a lot of people complain about, oh, well, that race had so much running, and oh, just because people are runners, that's why they're doing well. And there's a part of me that's like, well, you know, keep in mind, you know, if you're just a runner, like Mark Morgan is just a runner, and he did 120 burpees in a sprint distance rate, you know, so it's like, it's not just all about running. It's about, you have to be a good runner and have upper body strength to do well in the Spartan race.
Yeah, and so I could see, I tell you, you want to get the guy involved in the sport, put $50,000 prize money on the world championships at Tahoe. You know, the guy lives at altitude, it seems. You know, I mean, he's always raced. No, he doesn't live at altitude, but he does a lot of racing at altitude. Guys like Nicodemus Holland, right? He was there too, and, you know, he was kind of a non-existent athlete in the field, really. Mm-hmm, but, mm-hmm. I mean, he came in second at the Tour de Giants, 205 miles worth of mountain running in Europe. I mean,
oh wow,
yeah, he's tough. Yeah, and but mm-hmm. where he's going to shine is on those really long and really high altitude race. A guy like Joe Gray, you know.
Oh yeah, Joe Gray's awesome. Yeah.
Mountain runner.
Total.
Tell him, say, Joe, show up for this. Yeah, you're going to have to do a few obstacles, but you get to run on the mountain, you know, at altitude, mm-hmm. and if you win, you get $50,000.
Yeah, but worst case scenario, you have to do 30 burpees for 2 minutes or 1 minute and a half, whatever.
He'll catch you
two or three times, but you'll be so far ahead of the field.
That's right. You could probably have a sandwich after you finish your burpees and still beat people.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I don't know. It's all good. I think it gives you a lot to think about, lots to talk about.
Yeah, it really does. It is interesting for sure. But there's one thing though, like the longer races, there is more proportionate. There's more running just because you can only have so many obstacles and you can only make your heavy sandbag carry so long, you know?
Right.
So, and then that's why I go back to like, I like the super distance because to me it's a good mix of obstacles plus, you know, the running, the hiking, whatever the case may be. And I just think part of me is like, well, why isn't that a world championship distance? You know what I mean? Like that,
right.
then that's one, then everybody, someone who's better at sprints, then everyone can kind of converge there. Like that's the middle ground, right?
Yeah.
So in my book, that seems like it, but then of course it's also what I happen to like, so I'm probably biased. But,
yeah.
right. You know, but anyways, yeah.
So let me ask you some technical questions. Now, when you do run, how much focus do you put into your actual skill sets?
Good question. So, I mean, it's changed over the years. So, I mean, I've really only been in the sport for a year and a half. So it's not like, I knew what I was doing before I got into I just jumped into it, you know, on just my track training and my normal, strength training. And I wasn't sure, you know, how much I was going to do of it. I really liked it when I started, but I still had my track goals and all that. And if I hadn't been swept up into the obstacle racing world, I would be shooting for the Olympic trials again right now. And so that's kind of where my mindset was for the first few months. And then as I went along and had more success, I thought, ooh, man, this might really, really be my sport. With my point being that I've only really started training for obstacle racing probably a year ago. And in that year, I've been experimenting and seeing, you know, what seems to work well. I change things depending on, you know, how long the race is that I'm training for. But in general, I still like to pretty much keep my running that I did before, because I don't want to mess with that too much, because that's what's given me an edge as an obstacle racer. And so I still, you know, keep my running mileage up, maybe not quite the like 50 to 50 miles a week, 50 to 55 miles a week that I used to do. So, I do, you know, I run every day. You know, I take a day off when needed, you know, usually, you know, once every 2 weeks probably or so, but I do run every day and I enjoy that. And I do some work where I add in obstacles or or functional work, along the way. So I'll say, go to the track, do 400-meter repeats and add in, you know, burpees and bear crawls, and whatnot, and lunges every 400 meters. But then there'll also be days where I do go to the gym and do traditional strength training. And then I'll do days where I have days where I go to the rock climbing gym or the parkour gym and do, you know, the rock climbing, jump on some monkey bars and climb up some walls too. So, you know, it's a mix. I mean, I'd say I do a little bit more obstacle-specific work than traditional gym strength training, although I had a phase of strength training earlier this year where I was doing more gym strength training. So, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't want to say all over the board, because there is rhyme and reason to my craziness, but I do mix things up a lot. I do try to train for everything, really.
Well, I think it's important that you do, clearly. I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to quote Ben Greenfield. he said that, you know, in all of it, he feels that trying to organize work, like traditional sports, you know, you organize work, triathlon, you organize work. He said that because the sport really is kind of chaotic, you almost need to approach the sport with no really intent other than to just do a lot of crazy stuff. There's some method to that madness. I believe he's probably on point. So,
yeah,
I didn't mean to sound like I was having an issue with him. I'm just telling you that I.
No, I know. I love that. He's awesome. I suppose he could be considered a competitor of yours. And then,
no, I don't think so.
Yeah, but anyways, I mean, I think that there's an element of obstacle racing where you have to be able to just go with the flow, and you have to be able to think on your feet, and you have to be able to change things up, you know, both physically with the obstacles that are there. Oh, the race is 2 miles longer than I thought it was going to be. Well, guess I better just keep going. Or, oh, this, I've never seen this obstacle before. I mean, you have to be able to just go with it. But also, like, mentally, emotionally, you have to be able to say things. You know, if you're having a race and you're planning to do X well or whatever, and something goes wrong, like you sprain your ankle or whatever, but it's not so horrible that you can't run on it. It's like a, you know, a medium level sprain where you're like, should I keep running? Well, I wouldn't keep running if this wasn't the world championship race, but because it's the world championship race, I'm going to keep going, you know, because this is the race. Right. I'm not training for anything after this. I'm taking a break. But anyways, you have to be able to think on your feet, and you have to be able to say, okay, my goal was to, you know, win or podium or whatever. And now I have to just keep myself just as motivated to finish in the top 10 or finish, period. And I think that a lot of times, especially elite athletes who are used to always doing really well, struggle with that. I mean, there are a lot of elite, there's a handful of Spartan racers out there who have never not podiumed. And I wonder if that's a big fear. Like, what if I don't podium? Will I no longer be regarded as a good athlete? Will my sponsors not want me anymore? All that. And to me, it's like, you know, the last race, I got eighth place. I mean, I got eighth place. I had more people beat me in this last race than I had beat me in probably the last three or four or five races I did. But at the end of the day, it's all good. It's okay. And you have to be able to say to yourself, now I'm just going to finish as well as I can. And so I guess my point is that it is a crazy sport. And in track and field, you line up, you have your splits memorized, you know who's in your race, you have a really good idea of how well they're going to do versus you, and you go and you do your thing, right? But obstacle racing, it's so unpredictable. And one would say that makes it very exciting, and others might say it's hard. I know a lot of track racers, or I have an idea that quite a few track racers out there wouldn't necessarily do as well in obstacle racing proportionally, even if they build up their upper body, because they just aren't as good at going with the flow, you know?
Right.
They would need to know where their mile markers are. They need to be able to gauge.
Got it.
And you just can't do that. So
yeah.
It takes a special person who's able to
right.
deal with chaos well. And, you know, me being from a big family, I've been around a lot of chaos. And my brother, who's a sociology professor, likes to say that he thinks it's poetic justice that I'm one of the best obstacle racers in the world, and he thinks that my, you know, family kind of crazy kind of family got me ready for that. So anyways, I think Ben's on something with that, for sure.
Yeah. So listen, we got about a minute or so left. I'd like you to plug your coaching and how people could find you, and throw that out there for us.
Sure, yeah. I have a website called roserunnersports.com, and I'm shifting a little bit more towards online coaching than in person. I still have in-person clients whom I love, but online coaching means I can be more flexible, and I can make some money when I'm actually traveling for races, so that's helpful. Definitely loving to work with obstacle racers, runners as well, and yeah, roserunnersports.com is where I'm at, and on Facebook, I have an athlete page, Rose Wetzel, Rose Wetzel Fitness. I have actually my husband's last name on that too. I love chatting with people. So people can drop me a line if they have a question, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Well, Rose, it's been a pleasure to finally meet you. And I wish we'd had a little bit more time together. I kind of promised your husband we would have a little bit of, like he calls it, brown water together, but that never transpired. So hopefully sometime in the future we'll get a chance to do that.
Yeah, that would be great. This has been fun, and it was lovely to meet you and your wife on the cruise, and hopefully we will, connect soon.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and just have a great weekend, okay?
All right. Thanks, Richard. You too.
You bet. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network, drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.